It's episode 98 of Dive in the Podcast with special guest Stefan Varen. Dive in the Podcast is a weekly all about diving podcast for everyone. Whether you explore the oceans as a snorkeler, scuba diver, free diver, or tech diver, Dive In has something for you. The show is filled with diving news, feature interviews with guests from around the world, interesting dive topics, and ocean advocacy. Visit diveinpod.com to find out about the show, past guests, and our Patreon. Hi everyone, I'm Amit.
I'm Nick, and we're the hosts of Dive In the Podcast. Before we start today's episode, we'd like to thank you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in every week. Your support encourages us to keep going and make a bigger and better podcast. So Amit, what did you think about last week's episode with Nice Bagai? I missed it, so tell me a little bit about it.
Well, you know, that was one of the ones I got to tell you, but you probably should have, of anyone, been on that episode because, you know, he's like doing all the kind of similar things that you're doing, having these chats about cameras and neat projects that he's involved in. And I was just like, where's my man, Nick? Where are you at? So it was overall, it was really good. Like, you know, he's a very interesting young fella and he's done some really cool projects. So I quite enjoyed it. And yeah, he has a great perspective. So hopefully when you get a chance to listen to it along maybe with our listeners, then you will, you'll be able to give me some feedback on what your thoughts were and how sad you were to have missed it.
Oh, definitely sad every time I miss an episode. But you know what I'm not sad about is our guest tonight, because we're speaking to Stefan Varin. Stefan Varin is an accomplished freediver from Martinique who dives to 70 meters and has a breath hold of over 6 minutes, which is pretty impressive. He's also a freediving instructor with a passion for teaching. Stefan is a talented underwater photographer who uses his skill to showcase the underwater world and our connection to it.
Bonjour and welcome to the podcast, Stefan. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you so much. I'm really grateful for your invitation.
Well, we're very happy to have you here. We're going to start your interview in just a moment. But before that, I was just wondering if you ever happened to do any technical diving at all?
Not really. I'm a scuba diver also, but I didn't do any technical dive.
Well, today's news, unfortunately, is a rather sad topic that centers on technical diving. And it has to do with Tom Mount, the founder of IANTD, who has passed away. So he was Tom Mount was a technical diver and the founder of IANTD, and he passed away at the age of 83, unfortunately. Mount was a Navy diver who retired from the Navy in about 1963, and at that point he turned his attentions to two of his passions, that would being martial arts and diving. And so over decades he developed a ton of experience and was a founding member of the National Association for Cave Diving, later would go on to found Technical Diving Agency, IANTD, in 1991. And this sort of was like one of the key points in technical diving as people started to kind of see it as becoming accessible to the recreational diver and really changed kind of the light of how people viewed technical diving. And so for me, he's one of those guys, when you think of his background as a, you know, having studied martial arts and then moving to technical diving, was a gentleman that I always kind of had a high amount of respect for and would have loved to have had the opportunity to speak to. So unfortunately that won't happen. I can say that his accomplishments are well-renowned. And through IANTD, they've certified well over 10,000 technical divers in the time since its inception. And he's also led some of the first training for what we might call like recreational rebreather diving as well. So they were one of the first agencies that started moving into and or transitioning to the idea that, you know, the average person could effectively pick up a rebreather and start doing that. One of the things I quite liked about Tom was the fact that he was a guy that valued being a teacher, but also valued being a practitioner. And I recall, I'll try to find it and put it in the show links, but I recall reading a article by Michael Menudo that actually talks about the idea that he was even recently like planning on trying to link up with some of his old mates and do some pretty extensive diving, like well into these, like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of meters down. So like, this is a guy that I forget the name of the place. I'll have to dig it up. But one of the challenges that they were looking at,
he wasn't quitting.
No, he was not quitting at his age. He was ready to go do, I think, a 1,000-foot dive somewhere. So a really true, you know, entrepreneur and a real explorer, I think, to that extent. And one of the things that that stood out to me too when I've read a bunch of these articles surrounding him in the last few days was just people. Well, Michael in particular had asked him, you know, what's it like to have been an explorer? And he kind of withdrew a little bit and said, you know, I kind of was an explorer for a period of time, but you can't do that all the time. And sometimes you have to really just step away from it before you can come back to it. And so it seems like he was a very introspective fella as well. And unfortunately a huge loss to the diving world. But to those people who are lucky enough to have known him, you know, he made a huge impact. And to even to those like us who didn't, certainly a person that I think I have a massive amount of respect for. So very sad to hear that news.
Talking about stepping away, that's it for today's news. And it's time to dive in with Stefan Varin. So Stefan, where are you from?
Okay, so I was born in Martinique, which is a small island in the French Caribbean. This is where I grew up. And this is also the first time in my life when my father, you know, bought me a mask and some fins, some, you know, little plastic ship fins. So I went into the water and I spent a lot of time in the water with my father and I've got a big brother also.
I've been to Martinique once, very briefly, transiting through, but...
Nice.
Tell us a little bit about the island for people who haven't been there. What's it like?
Okay, so let's say that it's a volcanic island, so it's not flat. Okay, you have some mountains. And we have also some rainforest, and we have a couple of beach that are really nice. But let's say that for scuba diving, it's a place where you can look for small fish, some wrecks, but you won't see a lot of, you know, big fish, sharks. Very, 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 let's say no sharks at all, unfortunately. But you can, yeah, spend very good time there. The food is amazing. The weather is good. We don't have like the yellow fever, you know, the disease. We don't have that, so it's kind of cool. People here, they are speaking French and little bit of English. So it's a good place to be.
Yeah, I was just going to take the liberty that since it's just you, Amit, and I here, that maybe you can tell us a little bit about what's the cuisine like. What's the maybe your favorite dish from Martinique?
Let's say that before I try not to eat meat and fishes, but I must say that octopus, yeah, I love it.
Okay.
I love it. Just, you know, simple octopus with rice, beans, and
oh wow,
it's okay for me.
All right. Yeah,
very cool. And so now you mentioned Martinique being a volcanic island. So then what's the free diving like in a place like that? You mentioned, obviously, you're not looking for the big fish and sharks and this sort of thing. It must be a good place for free diving if you're taking up your spot there.
Yeah. So usually I dive in the north of Martinique in a town called Saint-Pierre. And my spot is there because here, particularly, we don't have to go far away from the shore to have some depth. So let's say that we have a special spot, like if you swim, like, let's say, 100 meters away from the shore, we can have like 80 meters deep. Okay, oh, wow. So we don't have to have a boat. We've got a boat, you know, for the safety, but you don't have to. It's not the same everywhere in Martinique, but in that spot, it's possible. So that's why it's a good place for free diving.
Oh wow, that sounds very interesting. So now, what was it that first brought you to free diving? How did you get involved with that?
Not really, because when I was five, my parents left Martinique to go to France. And of course, I was five, so I was with them. And we went in a very, you know, in the countryside of France, in the center of France. So no more ocean, no more sea. And I studied there. I studied biology and I became a biologist teacher for high school. I was working in France and I was coming back to Martinique sometimes during the holidays. And at a moment I was fed up with France. So I decided to go to work to a very, very, very small island in the Indian mm-hmm. Ocean called Mayotte, mm-hmm. which is between Africa and Madagascar, you know. Mm-hmm. And there, it's not a safety place. Okay, so mm-hmm. if you want to go for a hike in the rainforest, you can have some trouble. So the only thing I can do was going to the beach, and the beach was completely awesome. This is maybe mm-hmm. the most beautiful place I've ever been underwater. There is a beach over there called Angusha. Literally, if you swim, you will, I don't know. If you swim fast, maybe you will have, you know, some trouble with the turtles because there are so many turtles, small, big, wow. Incredible. And there is like a lagoon. And if you want to do some spearfishing, you have to do some spearfishing outside of the reef. Okay. And outside it's, I think I've never been outside without swimming with dolphins, without wow. Seeing some sharks. This was the first time I saw a whale shark, a baby whale shark. Wow. And mm-hmm. because I was every time in the water and underwater, and I realized that I can go deeper and longer than my friends. I was thinking to myself, okay, I want to do maybe something in free diving. And I had a luck because Guillaume Néry and Julie Gauthier, they went, you know, just for a week in Mayotte. And I have, you know, the pleasure to spend some time with both of them. And I was hooked. Just like mm-hmm. this, I was hooked.
So we purposely kind of rearranged this question a little bit deeper into the interview, but one of the first things we usually ask our divers, but I wanted to hear a bit about your connection to the water through this process before I asked it, was what then was the first memory that you had of the water? Oh. You kind of started alluding to being five with some goggles that your dad had given you, but what is it that you remember when you think back to your first time experiencing water?
Okay, so my first time memory was, you know, I think every child, you know, experienced that. You know, you see a shell, you think the shell is very, very, very deep. You think that, okay, I'm going to prove to my dad and to my big brother that I can reach it, you know. So you start, you dive and you think you're going to die. So you go as fast as possible. And you grab the shell and you come up like a trophy. And I was so, so, so happy. And a few months, I don't remember after that, I saw the movie. In French, it's Les Dents de la Mer. So mm-hmm. it's the Steven Spielberg movie, you know, with the white shark, the great white shark. Very old movie.
Oh, Jaws.
Jaws, exactly, Jaws. And after that, mm-hmm. I was completely scared in the swimming pool, in my bath, even in the shower, I was scared. So it took me a while, you know, to be comfortable in the water after seeing that movie.
Wow.
That's very cool.
Seems like you discovered freediving organically. Was there a point where you took a freediving course?
Yeah, so when I was in Mayotte, there was a guy who was teaching freediving. So I took some courses with him. Guillaume Néry gave us also like a one-day course. And
oh wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was really cool. But maybe after 1 year, I came back to France for the summer, and William Troubridge was doing a course, but you know, just in a 20-meter deep pool in Paris. So I engaged myself in the courses, and this is when I realized that the guy in my yacht was teaching absolute bullshit. He didn't know anything about freediving. He was just pretending to know things. And William Troubridge, it was like a 3-day courses. Teach me more in 3 days than the guy in 1 year. So after that, I decided to learn by myself at the moment. And I went to Koh Tao in Thailand to took some courses with Linda Paganelli and Jacques DeVos. And this was my first formal and courses in freediving. So in Thailand, in Koh Tao.
And then obviously that evolved and you became an instructor. What made you decide to become an instructor?
Since I'm a child, I love to learn things. I really love, and when I'm passionate, I don't count my time, and no matter time, distance, I just want to learn. When I was younger, I was playing the electric guitar, you know. I was doing some solos for metal band. So I was not in the Caribbean music style, not at all. And I spent maybe 2 years playing like between 6 to 12 hours a day my guitar. So when I was hooked by freediving, I was like, okay, I want to know a lot of things. So when I met Jacques and Linda in Koh Tao, we were speaking a lot of freediving, and let's say that they were quite amazed by the fact that I knew already a lot of story about the competition, the events, all the guys, all the athletes. And they told me, you know, that you can, we think that you have the abilities to become a freediver. So why don't you come in Dahab in Egypt to visit the Blue Hole? And I wanted to do that because Dahab in the Blue Hole is the mecca of freediving in the world. I think every freediver dream to go there. So I went there and passed my instructor course with them, and it was an achievement for me. But after that, I realized that it was just the beginning. So
yeah, right. it's kind of pretty cool. You got to sort of interact with all these really big names in freediving so early on in the sport. I read somewhere that you have a breath hold of over 6 minutes, which is pretty impressive. What's your favorite discipline?
Let's say that it's depth. Definitely. And I love free immersion. At the beginning, I was doing the monofin, but it's not easy to travel with the monofin. It's kind of big, and you always have trouble with that. So I switched to free immersion. And this year, I want to focus also on bifins. It's getting more and more popular, and I love the fact that free immersion, it's only with the arms, but bifin is only with the legs, and I want to do both. I want to do both.
And so is there an aspect then of training that you find to be most beneficial for your freediving?
Oh, I think there is. When I'm watching the freediving scene, I think that there is... Everything is about relaxation and confidence into yourself, okay? But guys like Miguel Lozano, which is a monster in freediving, doesn't focus a lot on being physically like a top athlete, because his confidence comes from his relaxation and his breath holding. But I met some freediver who are training a lot, you know, doing some push-ups, doing some pull-ups, doing some runs, because they want to be fit and physically ready. If their body are, you know, physically ready, they think that for freediving is going to be okay. So let's say that for me, it's kind of a mix. I find it more easy to train physically, but I more years after years, I think that I have to train more on my relaxation and visualization of the mental aspect of freediving. This is the key, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's been a pile of research on visualization that would suggest that it would be such a huge, important factor in issues like this. One challenge, though, that we have seen, I think a lot of folks having to deal with is competitive freediving and their ability to do that absent a job. Now, you know, I guess in big cases, maybe there can be sponsorship and all the rest of that. But you mentioned you were also a teacher. And so how, like, what mechanisms is it really your teaching that supports your freediving, or how are you in a place where you're able to train the way that you are?
Okay. So first I choose a place where I want to work because I know that mm-hmm. I can do some freediving. And, when I came to Martinique, I had a friend there who had a club. Okay, he had his freediving business, so I knew that mm-hmm. Coming back to Martinique will be an opportunity to work and also to train and also to teach freediving. So of course my schedule is a little bit tricky sometimes, but I try to do my best to. You know, when you are passionate, and I've got many passions, you try to find a way to do everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm very lucky to have my biologist teacher job, because first I love mm-hmm. that, and also it gave me the money to do something, you know, beside.
Very cool. And so as you pursue this training, is there a depth goal that you're working towards in the long term?
Okay, so usually I think that if you want to go for a PB, you must do like a certain amount of dive, let's say at maybe 80% of your PB, to have the adaptation for the narcosis, for your mental, because freediving, you know, is a completely dumb sport, you know. You're going to a place and sometimes you're at the bottom and you are thinking, okay, what the fuck I'm doing here? Okay, why are you doing that? You know, I've got a family in Martinique, all my cousins, my aunt, every time they ask me, what did you see during your freediving? And I answer, okay, I didn't see anything because I dive with my eyes closed. Okay, so did you bring back some fish? No, because I'm doing freediving, so I don't spear fish. Okay, so why are you doing that? Your eyes are closed and you don't see anything. Yeah, but I love it, and that's it. Okay, but of course I have to train as much as possible. And the problem is in freediving that if you want to do a certain volume of dive, you cannot go too deep. If you dip, let's say at 60 meter, it's finished for the day. So it depends. Sometimes I want to do like a deep dive. So I will do one and the session is very short. And sometimes I want to do a lot of dives. So I'm going shallow at 40 meters, let's say, and I would do a lot. So
do you have a certain number you're trying to get to? Because you're I think your Instagram says you're like at 70 meters. Like where are you going?
So yeah,
you don't have to tell us if you don't want to.
No, there is, you know, a big number if you're diving, you know, it's 100. So of course, you know, it's a 3-digit number. So even if no one will say, yeah, I'm chasing, you know, the 3-digit number, of course I have that in my mind. But I was doing basketball before. And I was like half professional in basketball. And the mental approach is completely different. Because when you go to a game in basketball, you are with your friends and you're like, okay, we're going to beat them. We're going to beat them. 1, 2, 3, go. Bah. But in freediving, you just have to be the opposite. You just like you're going to dive, but with the mental approach, like a lazy man, okay? Like, what are you going to do today? Oh, well, I don't know. Just put the rope and I will see if the equalization is good. I will go beyond. And if it's not good, I will just come back and that's it. So you try to not focus on anything because you don't want to stress yourself. Okay.
Right.
So it's a very, very different activity.
You paint a great picture there for me, actually. That's probably one of my favorite descriptions of freediving that I've heard to date. And we've interviewed quite a lot of freedivers, so thank you for that.
When I teach freediving, I always said to my students, it's the most laziest sport in the world. Because you have to save your oxygen, your energy. So you just want to free fall as soon as possible to do nothing. And just to sleep. And after that, you want to come back, but with less energy possible to come back as fresh as possible. So even if it is intense, you have to do it in the lazy way.
Mm. Yeah, I always find that, like, you know, I think in freediving, it's important to have a goal that you can work towards. But I think when you're in the water, you almost have to kind of forget it. Otherwise, it just gets in the way, right?
Exactly.
But I was wondering, what is your approach or what is your philosophy to teaching freediving when you have students in the water?
Okay. So first, the philosophy is the same when I'm teaching biology. First, you have to make your student be happy to be here with you. So you want to, of course, teaching some knowledge. Be serious about the knowledge, be serious about the safety things that you're going to teach. But between, you want to have some fun. Okay. And I think because of my background of musician, I focus also a lot of about the technique. Finning technique, the position of the head, position of the arms sometimes. I think technique is the key, especially when you are a beginner. If you don't have the technique, you will lose a lot of time in your freediving journey. So at the beginning, first pleasure, safety, technique, and between that, fun. And of course, having some sunscreen, because otherwise, after the first day, everyone is red and it's painful.
That's fantastic. So you mentioned too freediving in other places in the world. And so I was curious, you know, obviously Martinique sounds like there would be a very ideal situation for freediving there. How does it compare to freediving elsewhere in the world?
If I can compare, let's say DAB is very, it's just perfect because you don't really need a boat. You have 93 meters deep in just 2 meters from the shore. So it's a blue hole. So it's just perfect. I worked for 3 years in Egypt, so I know a bit the country. And I know that food and life is not expensive, you know, in Egypt. But in Martinique, the good thing is about the safety, because Unfortunately, in Egypt, if you have an issue, a health issue, let's say that the hospital is not so good. But Martinique is just like another place in France. So the hospital is good. Safety is very well organized. So if you have just a little problem, it's not a really big problem. Close to Martinique, there is Dominica, and there is it's also a very good place for freediving. Jonathan Sonex is there and is running a business there and organizing a big competition like every year, but now we have the COVID, so it crashed. But Dominica is really good, but also if you have some health problem, major health problem, you are in trouble. You are in trouble because the hospital is not so good. So Martinique is kind of mix. The condition in the water is good. There is no shark, so you don't have to be afraid or, you know, scared about that. And quickly you can be, you know, in good hands with good doctors and all the equipment that you need.
That's fantastic.
That's why I like it.
You mentioned Dominica, so I take it you've been there, right?
Yeah, I've been there, but the time I've been there, I have been there. It was not for freediving. It was for hiking because the volcano there is active. So you can see some beautiful things. And my father was also a science teacher, but his main subject and passion was volcano. So okay. Since I'm young, he always grabbed me to do some hike in the mountains to see all the rocks. And it was boring, but I saw things.
That's awesome.
And the volcano, yeah, in Dominica is awesome.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We're going to take a short surface interval and we'll be right back with more from Stéphane Warren. Thanks for tuning into the podcast this week. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or at podchaser.com. Reviews are one of the best ways to help others find the podcast. This episode of Dive In the Podcast is brought to you by Torpedo Rays Scuba.
You can find them online at torpedorays.com.
They've been teaching Canada how to dive for 25 years and are a proud sponsor of this podcast.
If you're in Atlantic Canada and want to take a course or see the shop, stop in and see us in Dartmouth and check out the huge selection of scuba, apnea, surf gear, and much more.
Dive tours are available for locals and visitors to experience all that our ocean playground has to offer.
TorpedoRays.com has a vast selection of dive gear at unbeatable prices, with free shipping available in Canada and quick shipping throughout North America.
So visit TorpedoRays.com or stop in the shop and you might even see one of us there.
Welcome back to Dive In the Podcast. We're speaking to Stéphane Varin, who is a freediver, instructor, and underwater photographer from Martinique. So, Stéphane, I wanted to change directions a little bit and talk about your amazing photography. And I was wondering, did freediving or photography come first for you? Which one?
Freediving. Definitely freediving. Because when I went to Mayotte, I had some couple of friends who were doing, some pictures, underwater pictures. So for me, it was really cool. You know, I can just go and swim with the dolphins or the manta rays, and they were taking some shots, so I didn't have to do it. But after a while, they left the island, and I was like, okay, what the fuck I'm going to do? So I just bought a small camera and a housing, and I start like this in photography underwater. But at the beginning, it was freediving.
I'm just kind of curious because you went out and got a camera. But was there a moment where you took a particular photo in the water early on and you went, "Oh, this is really cool. This is like, what did that feel like?"
If I can remember, let's say that I was completely hooked before going to Mayotte. because I saw in the internet a Canadian photographer. His name is Gregory Colbert. I don't know if you know him. He did a movie and some books called Ashes and Snow. And I saw the movie and I was like, what the fuck? There was, you know, some picture of him dancing underwater with some sperm whales, some whales, and out of water also with some elephant. And I was like, oh, this is so magical. This is so magical. But all the picture was were in sepia, you know, the color sepia. It's like black and white, but with yellow and orange inside. And I was just wanted to do that. So I was listening to the music of the movie like every day, and I went in the water. When I was in the water with my camera, I had, you know, like the music in my mind. And what I could see in my computer, in the movie, in my mind also, and I was trying to imitate not really the picture, but the feelings, you know, the picture. And when I start to do my first dolphin pictures, I was like, okay, for me, it was like, this is it. I have a connection with the dolphins. Like, we are brothers. and of course, we are not brothers. I have a funny story about that, if you want.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, it sounds a little bit like Jacques Mayol there. But.
Yeah, so I was on a boat with some friends, and we went to look for dolphins, and we met dolphins. All my friends and me, we were, you know, in the water with the dolphins, and they were, you know, with some fins, but me, I had my monofin. And the dolphins start, you know, to swim a little bit away slowly. So we were swimming with them, and they increased the speed. So all my friends with their bifins could not, you know, follow them. But me, so at a moment, I was alone with the dolphins, with my monofin. And in my mind, I was crazy. You know? I was like, yeah, we are friends. We can communicate. We're brothers. I'm like them. I'm like them. And I was really enjoying. And at a moment, a dolphin separate from the pot and swim, but really fast. And just stop like 2 meters in front of me. He stood up like, you know, he was vertical.
Vertical.
Yeah. And he was, you know, moving his tail. And for me, it was like, this is my first and last warning. You enjoy your time. Now it's time for you to leave us because you are just a moron. Okay. So go back on your boat. You're not a dolphin. You're just a stupid human. And I was like, okay, this is my first lesson. I don't belong to the water. I'm not a fish. I'm not a dolphin. I'm just a human. So stay at your place, be humble, because yes, you bought a monofin, but that doesn't give you special power, and you don't communicate with dolphins. They just tolerate you.
Yeah, but you were dolphin kicking, right? Surely that's good enough.
Yeah.
Oh, that is an awesome story.
Yeah, but let's say that the pictures and the meeting with the dolphin, yeah, that hooked me for doing some freediving underwater picture and photography.
I find it really amazing because not only did you have this all these early experiences with these really sort of elite freedivers, but then photography came early on, which I find is pretty cool. I was wondering, do you find there are parallels between sort of the art of photography and the sport of freediving for you?
Yes, I really think, because in freediving, you know, you have to be in the moment. They say that you have to be water if you want to go deep. And in photography, it's the same. You have to fix a moment. Photography is living, you know, a time and just capture something that makes you feel a little bit more alive than the moment before and the moment after. So you have to be at the right place, at the right moment, and it's the same when you are diving. When you are diving, you just want to focus on your kicking, then your equalization, then your free falling, but you don't have to think about what is going to be after that. You just want to be in the moment. And I loved the work of a Belgian photographer. His name is Fred Boyle. In French, we said Fred Buil. And he had kind of a philosophy behind his picture. He doesn't talk too much, but the little I could read about makes me think that there is that strong connection between photography and free diving. You have a feeling, and you just want to capture it and living it. And all your memories will be after that. Okay? And the thing is that, for me, photography is that you are alone. Okay? You are with your camera, and you see something. You take a picture, and after that, you want to share with others what you did. And in freediving, it's the same. They say freediving is a sports team. And yes, it is a team sport, because you need safety. But when you are in underwater, you are completely alone. Okay? And you don't speak. So it's after you dive that you can share your dive with others, but not the moment. And photography is the same. You cannot share the moment, but you can share after you took your picture.
Mm-hmm. I really like that.
So for me, this is the connection.
It's very emotive for sure. And I'm certainly not a photographer, but I listened to Nick talking about this, and my dad was a photographer, and he was always telling stories about what story are you going to tell with this picture? Yeah. And, as a kid, I would think, I don't know what you're talking about. It's a picture of a thing. Like, I'm not telling a story. I'm taking a picture of the thing. And so this leads me to the question about composition, because that's where, he kind of taught me a little bit about the idea that, how do you bring elements of a photograph together to be able to tell a story? What is going to lead you to the focal point that you want to look at? And what is that focal point telling, and what emotions are you going to capture in it? And so I guess long-winded way, unsurprisingly, because I'm asking the question, you do have a wonderful eye for that composition. And so we were curious how you chose your subjects and how you decided on what it is that you were going to shoot, because they aren't just your traditional pretty pictures that you're shooting. Some of them are very creative, right?
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. I think that I apply the same method that I used to apply for music. So first, when I was playing guitar, I was only listening to guitars. Okay? I was listening to a lot of guitar players. And even if you're not practicing, listening is going to, put something in your brain and make your brain thinking music differently. So first, I'm watching a tons of underwater picture. And after that, I'm trying to study a little bit, the technique and the composition rules. And the more picture you watch, the more picture you take, the more picture you want to throw in your garbage, and the less you keep, okay? And at a moment, I think everything become instinctive, okay? And I think also when you are in the water, you don't know what you're going to see. When you see something, you don't know how they're going to move. So I just want to focus on what I can control. And what I can control is the light. If the sun is behind me or in front of me or in the side. And just trying to do my best. And I think that, this is a little bit crazy, but every time I am in the water, if I saw something, there is a typical music that comes to my mind. and I take the picture that is the feeling of the music that I'm taking to my, that is on my mind. And when I'm taking some humans, I think that not everyone is beautiful underwater. You know, there are, I have some friends who are, let's say, handsome guys, but underwater, I don't know why it doesn't fit. Maybe it's me. I cannot take them, you know, perfectly, but some guys, they just transform themselves. And I'm very lucky to have some friends that are really beautiful underwater. I can put them, you know, head down without a mask, and they have the water in their sinuses, but they still have a peace face. And also, I took a lot of pictures. My wife is a yoga teacher. And at a moment she needed, and she still needs some pictures, you know, for the social media and everything, and also for memories. And she's very, 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 she's full of grace. She has an eye for what is beautiful and what is not beautiful. And she doesn't hesitate to tell me, that picture that you took is crap. This one is good. And year after years, I think it helps me for the composition side. Sometimes it's just a subject and, let's say, what we call empty spaces. Okay, and this is what we call a minimalist picture. And sometimes you can try to bring some different elements. Recently, I was hooked also by the work of a guy who is doing the perfume for a brand called Aesop. He's a French guy called Barnabé Fillion. And he was talking about different elements and what he called the liminal space. That means that sometimes you took a picture of something that didn't exist before and will not exist after, like the shore. The shore is not something that is fixed because of the wave, it's moving. So it's, and you just try to capture, to stop the time and capture that liminal moment. And you just want to put a little bit of water, a little bit of sand, and a little bit of someone. And if you have like the third rule composition or the golden number composition, sometimes the mix is just good. And if the light is good, the picture will be very nice. But yeah, in photography, light is the key. And it depends on what you want in focus or not. And sometimes it's interesting to have the focus on the left or on the right, but not always in the center, in the center, in the center, because at the moment it's a little bit boring.
Mm-hmm. So the obviously the photographs you take, I discovered through Instagram, social media, but like do you print them? Do you sell your photos, or do you have books, or like what do you do with your photos other than maybe social media?
Okay, so. I had the opportunity because I did a work with a woman, a swimmer, which her name is Coralie, and because she was an Olympic medalist in the London, I think it was in London Olympic. She's quite famous, and we had artistic ecological projects about the plastic pollution in the ocean, and we start that like a game, but it grows. So we had some couple of interview in the French TV, in the national TV, in different podcast also, in the local TV, and also in some magazine, in the biggest magazine in France, The name is Plongée Magazine. In English, it will be something like Dive Magazine. So we were featured there. So it was really big for me. And after that, we decided to sell the picture for a foundation. She has a foundation. She teach the children how to swim, because in France and in Martinique, there is too many every year children that that don't know how to swim and die in the water. So she focused on that. So we sell the picture for that, and I think that I will start to sell my picture very soon. Because I do that, but only on demand. But I think that I will do a website soon to sell them. Because more and more people are asking me to do some photo shoot of them underwater. And maybe I want to sell them. I don't pretend maybe to be an artist, but I try to do my best to share my personal view of what I see. So maybe I'm not an artist, but I'm in an artistic way, an artistic journey. So, yeah. So I have been published in a couple of magazines, and yeah, I'm going to try to sell my picture soon, very soon.
Nice.
And did that project come about just from the pairing of you two having met, or was there a different way? Like, was it purposely for raising funds, or did that just evolve? Like, I'm just curious as to how you come about into such a project.
Okay, so I was teaching freediving, and I knew that Coralie was there, and she asked us in our business if she can try freediving. So of course we say yes. Just come. And she came, and I was taking some picture of the students. So I took some picture of her. I sent her the pictures, and she asked me, okay, I have a foundation and I need some picture. Do you want to do some for me? And I was like, yeah, no worries, I can do it. So I start to do that, and we start to slowly by grabbing, you know, some plastic trash that were at the bottom of the sea or floating underwater, and we start to take some picture of her with the trash, and we start to post them, and the thing just grow like that. Mm-hmm. And it's like maybe 1 year after that, some people ask her, but don't you want to sell them? But I didn't think about it, you know? So, but you know, in my mm-hmm. life, everything is like mm-hmm. that. When I was in Egypt, I was taking some picture of my wife and picture of the fantastic place we were going. And I was just thinking, okay, Egypt is cheap. So I just want to print some of my picture, but you know, in big format, because it's much cheaper than in France. Mm-hmm. So a friend told me there is a Canadian, a Canadian guy who is a photographer, and he can do that for you, and he can speak French. For me, yes, perfect. So I went with a black and white picture and a mm-hmm. color picture, and he printed them, and he told me, yeah, man, they are really good. Do you have more? And I was like, yeah. So he told me, okay, bring them back to me. So I bring them, 10 pictures. And he told me, okay, in 10 days, you're going to do a picture exhibition. Don't do nothing. I will prepare everything for you. So, okay, thanks. So I did my exhibition, and at the end, they told me, okay, so you sell them how much? And I was like, sorry, I didn't think about selling them. For me, it was completely crazy that someone wants to buy my picture. I was no one. But right. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, but then that's the truest expression, right? You're basically doing something that you love, and then somebody else finds the value in it for you. So there isn't an ulterior motive, and maybe that's some of the reason why it comes through and or connects to other people too. I'm of course speaking not at all as a photographer, but
I really think that if you are doing things for the money, you will do something that will please the maximum of people, and you will not have your style, let's say. But if you are doing things only because you liked that, maybe it will work, maybe no, but
excellent.
It would be more honest, maybe, to yourself, more authentic.
And so I'm thinking about, you know, we talked a bit about composition, and then you talked about how you found some of this plastic trash and what have you. That must have been difficult for you to, I guess, stage or pose some of those pictures in water with all that plastic. So I guess, kind of a twofold question. How did you manage it? And the other piece was, how did the public receive this picture these pictures that you guys put out?
So first, Coralie also, obviously, is very easy on water, of course. So for her, it's not a problem to be head down with the sinus. She is completely flooded. And of course, we are doing a lot of try. Usually we first try with the mask. We see if it's work. And if it's good, we try to do them without the mask. And we have a buoy like this. She can dive. I took the picture. I grab her. We come up to the surface, and she can rest with the buoy. And we do that a couple of times. And luckily, we never had a session without any, let's say, good pictures. But I have to be honest, sometimes the light is not good, or, you know, there is a lot of little things, you know, in the water. Mm-hmm. So the focus is not very easy. So that is when sometimes I switch to black and white picture because the color is not good. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have the idea to, you know, at the beginning to do, okay, today we're going to do some black and white picture. Sometimes, you know, because you are outside. If you are in the studio, you can do whatever you want. But when you are in nature, you always have to adapt in processing or in post-processing.
Yeah.
So that's it. So first, this is why, this is how we act. And the public received that in a very good way, because we didn't want to do something that, you know, will make people feeling guilty. Okay, we didn't want to say like, oh, look at the fishermen, they are polluting, you know, the sea. Look at the tourists, they are throwing their things, you know, in the water. We just wanted to do some as beautiful as possible picture, but put some strange objects and make people think, oh, that picture will be very good, but there is something annoying, there is something disturbing. And what is disturbing and what is ruining the beauty of the picture is that plastic. Or sometimes, you know, we wanted to make her in the position of drinking a beer, but it's not out of water, it's underwater, and it's a bottle that we just find there, you know. So there is always something strange in the picture. And people at the beginning they were like it's beautiful, but at the moment they were like, we must do something.
I found those images, I mean, they're beautiful, but they're also provocative. They definitely make you think, you know, that there's a beautiful person swimming underwater, and but there's plastic, and the brain, it doesn't work, right? Because it's not natural. I love that series. I just have a quick question. You mentioned earlier when you started freediving that, you know, you went out and bought a camera. Are you still shooting with the same camera? What equipment are you shooting with now?
Oh, no. No. Today I'm shooting with Sony A7 R3. Mm-hmm. With 16 to 35 f/2.8 lens.
Nice.
With Neymar. Yeah, the brand is Neymar. Housing camera. So before, a lot of pictures were taking with Sony RX100. And a small fantasy camera housing. And of course, switching to the Sony A7 R3 is a big step for the quality, definition, for everything.
More range, yeah.
But at the first beginning, it was a Canon, I think, Canon S90 or 95. And it was at that during those days, it was good.
Yeah.
But today, it will be not good at all, I think.
Everything evolves. So we've been talking about your freediving and your photography. Where can people find you online if they want to see your work?
Okay, so Instagram, of course. If they type Stéphane Varin, they will find me. I post a little bit on Facebook, but I post more on Instagram. Maybe soon I will have a website.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it for the moment. That's it. Because the magazine, if people they want, they can try to have Plongée magazine July 2021.
Okay.
I think it was August. Yeah,
nice.
The issue was August, that's it.
Well,
for the moment.
Well, let us know. Shoot us a message when your website is up, and then we'll share that with our listeners.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to be selling prints online, I'm sure other people would love to get a print. Stéphane, what keeps you diving?
There is no limit. I think there is no limit. And when I was playing guitar, I wanted to know how fast I can play and how clean. When I was studying, I wanted to know how many different animals I could learn about. I'm completely hooked by nature, being in the nature and being underwater. So I think this is what keeps me underwater, the love of water, the love of nature, and the love of sharing.
That's wonderful.
Everything I did, I ended by teaching it. So I love to share.
Awesome. Well, maybe you'll be teaching underwater photography before long.
Who knows?
Wonderful. Who knows? Well, I just want to say thank you on behalf of the team here for taking the time out to chat with us and telling us about your journey underwater and with photography and also sharing a little bit about Martinique. You're the first person that we've had from Martinique. Yeah. So it's an absolute pleasure. So thank you for taking the time.
So if you want to come, just come. Mm-hmm. My wife will give you some yoga teaching, Aurélie, and it will be good for you.
Yoga and freediving.
I mean, so you're welcome. Don't forget the food.
There you go.
The food is good.
That's right.
It sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Well, thank you very much, Stéphane, for joining us. That was a fantastic episode, and I quite enjoyed listening to some of the perspectives that he has when it comes to underwater photography and its training, and as well when you reflect back on the perspectives of a person returning back to the Caribbean countries. So probably a thing that's near and dear to my heart. But stay with us. We're going to head on over to April for her pro tip.
And then we're heading on over to Justin, who hopefully is not late with the travel segment. And where are you taking us, Justin?
All right. And thanks. This week's, what I believe is my last wrap up to my scuba diving wish list. You never know, we may bring it back in the future, but for right now it's the wrap up. It's the coldie but the oldie, the snowy but the goodie. I don't know, I'm making weird references to Antarctica. I mean, obviously diving in Antarctica is, I think, a dream for a lot of people, or Arctic. It's funny because I'm much closer to the Arctic than Antarctic, but Antarctica has always been something that interests me, like, you know, the near the like icebergs and, you know, the just the trip to get there. To, as far as I know, most ways people are diving there are, you know, from boats, from like a big expedition kind of Antarctica cruises. And then you go through the Southern Sea and go down and get on your Zodiac and your dry suit and go cruise down to the, you know, the dive sites. And looking around and researching, there's surprisingly more dive sites. I mean, it's a whole huge place, so I guess I should be that surprised that there is a whole bunch of places that you can go diving and around Antarctica. But the list of opportunities is far larger than I would have expected. I mean, I think this one is one of the pretty rare ones, but I wonder if any of our listeners have dove in Antarctica or I guess even the Arctic, and just what their experiences were, and would they do it again, and was there something that they got to do or didn't do that they want to know. Shoot us a message on our socials, email diveinthepodcast@gmail.com, and let us know what your experience is. But April, you were basically diving in the Arctic this weekend.
I was gonna say, I would love to dive either Arctic or Arcticas, and yeah, what I was doing was quite similar to, I guess, diving in the Arctics, which was ice diving. And I love ice diving. I think this is my fifth year in a row doing some ice diving. And one thing I really noticed this year was I was the safety diver for the day on Saturday. So my job was basically to sit there fully kitted up and if there was a need to jump in and go rescue or search or whichever. And I was doing that with students too, of course. But I noticed on Saturday, it was like a pretty chilly day. I think it was like minus 10 outside and it was snowing. And just sitting still on the ice was so freaking cold. I had my heated vest on, which was on like full blast, and my halos and everything, and I was just frozen like to the core. When I actually got into the water to do some diving, I was like, oh, this is so nice and warm. So just sitting on the ice was like unbelievably cold. But I kind of learned my lesson, because then on Sunday it was even colder outside. It was like a minus 16 day, but the sun was out, so of course that always, you know, makes you feel a little bit better. But I sat on a wood pallet that day, and honestly, I was not cold whatsoever. And I donated my heated vest to a cold student. So I was heated vestless as well. So I guess my pro tip this week is if you're ice diving, try and do your best to stay directly off the ice, and maybe sit on a wood pallet, or even I think just like a blanket, any sort of like divider between you and the ice is going to make a huge, huge difference.
Oh yeah. I mean, anyone who's been out on the ice, I think, can experience cold feet and misery of sitting on ice for prolonged periods of time. I have to give JP a hard time for, you know, having his rescue divers not on the pallet. I mean, I would normally, the way we would set that up, I would expect would be the pallet and a box there or something, a crate or whatever to sit on, so that you're ready to go, but you're also up off the ice, because you definitely have to be insulated. Contrary to popular belief, these boots are not like overly insulated. You know, there's a piece of rubber on the bottom, and there's a bit of a sole, and then there's whatever undergarment you're wearing, and that undergarment is crushed under the weight of you. You're not floating neutrally buoyant in the water, so you basically now are down to maybe, what if you're lucky, 2 centimeters of space between the ice and you. And yeah, you're gonna lose all that heat down there. And anyway, that's exactly. definitely you can notice it if you're out on an ice diving course, or you're around out on a, you know, lake, maybe you're not ice skating or something, mm-hmm. and somebody else is ice skating. If you step up onto like a snowbank versus standing on the ice, even, you'll notice a difference. So
And it was a cold, cold year for ice diving, let me tell you. I mean, this year, as opposed to other years, like, I've never experienced this, but all of our gear was just freezing and freezing so fast. So my boots froze solid that I actually had to tie them off on a rope and leave them in the ice hole for like 15 minutes to de-thaw because they were like rock solid. And by the time we had finished cleaning up the site after the dives, my dry suit had actually frozen solid like a block of ice, like on my body. So I couldn't even undo the zipper or get it off. So I had to wear it back to the shop and then stand in the rinse bin and be hosed off with hot water in order to get the dry suit off. So like 10 of us rolled up to the shop after the course and we're just hosing each other off with hot water so we could get out of our suits. So yeah, it was a cold year for it, but learn some new tricks, I guess, on staying warm.
Yeah, that's funny. I was at decathlon and was joking on our morning briefing that the weather was so nice because the sun was out and it was warm and sunny seeming. And I made the statement that it's basically spring-like out there. And I guess we were only a couple kilometers away from where you guys were diving and it wasn't so spring-like.
No, not so spring-like.
Yeah, I always Google around the time that Torpedo Race does their ice diving course. I always Google the like coolest setups for ice diving courses, and you know, some people have like fishing shacks that they ice dive out of, and all these crazy, crazy things. You know, one of these years, I know we've talked about it so many times, but we'll have to actually build something super cool to dive from.
This would have been an awesome year for it, too, because I feel like this year we actually have ice that's staying, whereas some years it's like we have ice and it's gone, then we have ice and then it's gone. So I almost feel like this year we could have built like a structure on the ice and just like left it and used it like, you know, every weekend or whatever as our ice setup, which would have been really cool.
That would be wild. Yeah. I wonder if you can do that. I guess so. You can put a shack out on the ice. You can.
Yeah, I mean. People do it when they go ice fishing, so I feel like maybe you could ask permission. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to figure out what the rule is on that. Anyway, this travel segment and pro tip have veered far away from the thrust of the matter, but that's okay.
We're very on good theme time this week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're doing the show completely without Nick and Amit because both April and I were unable to attend the recording of the episode. I don't even remember why at this point, but so we had to do our travel segment and our pro tip separately. So
there you have it.
Guess we bid you farewell and throw it back to Nick and Amit to say goodbye and wrap up the show.
That does it for today's episode. I want to thank Stefan for joining us, and it's been an absolute pleasure as we're almost wrapping up season 2.
Wow. Yeah. Pushing episode 98 here. Nick, I of course want to thank you as well for setting up that interview and for drafting a lot of those questions because, frankly, my French sucks, and you were able to interpret some of the information that we had for Stefan as we were going through that. So that was a great bit of teamwork there to have you dealing with it.
Yeah, it was actually kind of fun. It's the first person that we had from Martinique, and I guess it was the first person who I had to research, and all the material on them was pretty much in French. So that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But you know what that means, Amit? A truly Caribbean night. We're representing Grenada, Trinidad, and Martinique.
That is an original on the show right there.
And I know we're post-editing, you know, April and Justin, so thank you for hopping in there. But this was a Caribbean episode.
That's right. Brought to you by your brothers from the Caribbean. And all right, back to the seriousness. We will also thanks to April and to Justin, because let's face it, at the end of the day, if we didn't have them on the show, it wouldn't be nearly as much fun. And frankly, if Justin didn't edit the show, we probably wouldn't have a show. So that's great, Justin. We appreciate all the work that you're going to do on this show and having to listen to the garbage that we're spewing back and forth here. So carrying on. Don't forget, you can support this podcast at patreon.com/diveinpod and get some fun rewards for doing so. Visit our website, diveinpod.com, for all the links you need, episodes, merch, and so much more. On social media, you can follow Justin at idiveok, April at April Weikert,
And you can find me at nicholaswinkler.com. Next week, we speak to Pete Mesley, a world-renowned wreck diver and the owner of Lust for Rust based in New Zealand.
This episode of Dive in the Podcast was brought to you by our sponsor, Torpedo Rays Scuba.
Thank you for listening to Dive in the Podcast.